Welcome to Hockey Mountain High, your go-to Avalanche podcast. Eric Dean here of Mile High Sports, and we're here to cover Game 1 of the Dallas Stars-Colorado Avalanche series. On Tuesday night, where the Avs did something they haven't done in the playoffs. We've seen them do it over and over again the regular season, especially this year. But in the playoffs, they haven't done something that they did yesterday since 1997, where they erased a 3-goal deficit successfully and won the game. It's not supposed to be that easy in the playoffs, but they made it look easy. I mean, I think there was something really great about the way that game unfolded, and I'm going to break it all down here. But for starters, I'm going to start from the top, and we're going to go with that first period where the constant conversation of rest versus rust, a team coming in off of a 7-game series, and it's which do you prefer, which one works out best, and there is really, truly no method to the madness. I mean, in 2022, we saw the Avalanche win game one of every single one of their series, and that included second round against the St. Louis Blues, coming off of a 4-game sweep of the Nashville Predators, and Stanley Cup final against the Tampa Bay Lightning, coming off of a 4-game sweep of the Edmonton Oilers, where Tampa had to go to 6 games to beat the New York Rangers in the Eastern Conference final. But alternatively, you also had this year the Boston Bruins come in off of a 7-game series against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and they take on the Florida Panthers, who were resting after beating the Tampa Bay Lightning in 5 games, and Boston looked like a team that was on their groove. And of course, the Florida Panthers looked like a team that had too much rest. So there is truly no method to the madness, but there is no clear consistent pattern. But what I saw with the Avalanche and the Stars yesterday in that first period, as much as you want to say maybe the Avalanche had too much rest and that's why it took them a minute to get going, I think it's the other way around, in the sense that I see it as Dallas was continuing, you know, kind of playing 2 nights earlier and continued the momentum they had against the Vegas Golden Knights 48 hours prior. And it looked like they were able to continue that trend, play really well in the first period, get a 3-0 game lead, scoring 3 goals and, you know, the power play, 5-on-3, drawing penalties, everything that was happening after what looked like a pretty good couple shifts for the Avalanche to start the game. I thought they started well, but then it just got away from them. And as the game went on, you saw what it looked like to see a team that had played 2 nights earlier and just came off of a very grueling 7-game series, when the person on the other side is not the Vegas Golden Knights or even the Avalanche, someone that is also in the middle of the same series as you. The team on the other side is more refreshed. So rather for me than looking at it as Colorado came out rusty and then got their footing, I see it the other way around. I see it as Dallas came out moving and running and, you know, continuing their momentum and then started to see those and feel those heavy legs. And you saw the Avalanche start to do their thing as well and kind of impose their will the same way against the Winnipeg Jets. What I do want to get away from, because this is something that was kind of the narrative driven, the driving narrative, I should say, around the Avalanche between the first and the second round, was let's break down all the things that the Winnipeg Jets did wrong. And of course, people gave the Avalanche credit, but most of the focus was on how could the Winnipeg Jets have done better and not as much on look how freaking good this Avalanche team is. And I don't want to get sucked into that same narrative. So I don't want to sit here and completely say it was Dallas having heavy legs, but that was a factor. But at the same time, that being a factor against most teams, you still hang on to a 3-0 series game lead. A 3-0 lead in the first period. You still probably score something in the second or third period or even in the overtime period if you give up 3 goals in regulation. You still find a way to win that game. But against the Avalanche, it's just not going to happen. You know, one of the things that we've talked about all year with this Avalanche team is the fact that their defensive breakdowns were a lot more common this year than in years past, and that includes the pairing of Makar and Taves. And there's a reason why, despite Cale Makar having 90 points, he's not the favorite to win the Norris Trophy. He's probably not even going to finish second. I think Roman Josi is going to finish second. And there was a lot of talk about, is he playing hurt? You know, Cale Makar, is he playing hurt? Is he at his best? A lot of struggles, the defensive breakdowns, the goaltending has an 890-something save percentage because the team around him is breaking down, a lot more turnovers, so on and so forth. That was kind of something we talked about a lot during the regular season. But they flipped the switch as soon as the playoffs started. I don't need to bore you with the Winnipeg series anymore because we've been down that road. But against the Dallas Stars, in the final 43 minutes and 4 seconds of regulation, so following the goal that made it 3-0, the Stars had 7 shots the rest of the way in regulation. The Avalanche imposed their will, played a tight checking game, and hilariously enough, Jared Bednar comes out today on Wednesday and tells media that our forechecking game needs to be better, and those are the improvements we're going to make for game two. So we saw what the Avalanche could do when they start to impose their will. We saw what they do when they start to play a tight defensive checking game, which involves, obviously, their forechecking forwards led by Nichushkin, Lekkonen, and so on and so forth. But we also saw their offense continue to do their thing as well. And that's the most important thing about this team. When their offense is going, and it seems like their offense is going right now, Val, Nate, Mikko, and even the depth, kudos to Miles Wood, we'll talk about you as well, when your offense is going and your defense is playing that kind of game, it is the perfect recipe for you only give up, you know, far and few shots in between. You give up 7 shots the rest of the way in regulation after the 3-0 goal. You give up 6 in overtime. You need your goalie to stand on his head, and he does. But then your offense comes through because you trust it will. And that was my favorite part of that game. There was all sorts of aspects. There was defensive breakdowns, bad penalties. Granted, I didn't love all the calls that the Avalanche got in the first period, especially Trenin getting called for a high stick shortly after what looked like a moving pick on Miro Heiskanen that should have made it a 4-on-4 instead of a 5-on-3. But, you know, the calls always cancel out the Rupe Hintz embellishment, so on and so forth. But, you know, the Avalanche were playing a very uninspiring game. That was a storyline, and that was an aspect of the game. Then we saw the Avalanche's offense start to take over in the second period. 11-3 in shots, 2-0 in goals. We saw their power play dominate 2-for-2 in a minute 44, just like against the Winnipeg Jets in game one. Perfect. Just incredible on the power play. And then we saw the Dallas Stars in the third period. I think the Avalanche had like a 10-minute stretch without a shot on goal. And then in overtime, the Dallas Stars come out and they go on an offensive run. And then the counterattack, which we see the Avalanche do so well for so many years, they come back and attack with Miles Wood and using his speed to beat Heiskanen and then Ottinger. So a lot of aspects to that game. And I think it was the perfect recipe for why this team is and should be considered one of the, if not the favorite to come out of the Western Conference, in my opinion, but one of the favorites to win this entire thing from the 8 remaining teams. If Colorado's not on your top 2 or 3 choices, there is something wrong, or maybe you're not watching the games, because there's so often we sit here and talk about what the other team's doing wrong when it's really the Avalanche that are just playing spectacular hockey right now. Going into the second period, the Avalanche down 3-0, obviously. We saw them start off a little bit stronger. They draw a penalty on Dadonov, and it takes all of 13 seconds for Nichushkin to crash and bang in the crease and score. Then they get another penalty called on Craig Smith minutes later. I think it was like 2 minutes later. And the Avalanche need a little more time to capitalize, but they get one from Cale Makar on just the beauty of a shot from the point. Reminded me of game one against the Winnipeg Jets, honestly. The Avs were 2-for-2 on the power play. Makar's point shot was redirected by Nichushkin, and then the second goal, Makar just did his thing with a shot from the point. And it was literally the same thing today. Granted, Nichushkin scored from the crease, but primary assist Cale Makar, power play goal Cale Makar, 2 power plays, minute 44, total time on ice, on the power play to score twice. Just spectacular stuff, incredible stuff for the Avs. So they start to make this a game. It's 3-2, and this is the part that I was talking about going into the third period and never really feeling stressed about this game if you're an Avalanche fan. They tied it up so easily. It was so, I don't want to say effortlessly, because I don't want to say MacKinnon, Mikko, and Kale and that entire top line right off the opening faceoff of the third period was not putting in the effort, but they make it look effortless. And they crash and bang, and shot, rebound, comes to MacKinnon, puts it in over Ottinger, who was way out of his crease, trying to challenge the shooter, and it's suddenly 3-3. Like, this is a pattern that we saw against the Winnipeg Jets that we're seeing again against the Dallas Stars in a small sample size of one game. When the other team is dominating, they're not entirely taken over. When the Avalanche dominate, they take over. So the Dallas Stars have a strong first period. They score three goals. They have a 9-5 shot advantage. The Corsi numbers look like it was favoring them, but it wasn't, you know, domination the way that we saw the Avs dominate the Winnipeg Jets for spurts so many times in the first round, and the way we saw the Avalanche have a 17-7 shot advantage in the final 40 minutes of regulation and just really stymie the Dallas Stars and not give them nearly anything to shoot at. When the Avs are on their game, it is a lot stronger than when the other team is on their game, and that's the biggest pattern that we're witnessing here. Definitely got to give a shout-out to Val Nichushkin. Goal and assist, 8 goals, 1 assist. I spoke very highly about him when I did the Guerrilla Sports podcast with JJ following Game 5. I spoke very highly about him when I did the Hockey Mountain High podcast here at Mile High Sports the very next day. This guy is crushing it, and I am so glad to see him doing what he's doing. He deserves it. He's crushing it, and the Avalanche need him. And we're getting to the point, you know, where he's part of the top four. It's not Makar, Mikko, and Nate. It's Makar, Mikko, and Nate, and Val. You know, if you're going to sit here and quote-unquote core four some teams, like Toronto has a core four where Nylander, Tavares, Marner, and Matthews are included, I would take Nichushkin above most of those guys. So I think we're getting to that point where Val isn't just the guy filling in on the top line because Landeskog is out. Val is the guy. And Val should be considered one of the core four of this team, along with Mikko, Nate, and Kale. So he scores his 8th goal. He leads the playoffs. He's 1 goal away from tying the NHL record for the longest goal-scoring streak to open a postseason. He's at 6 games. The record's at 7. He's currently in 2nd, tied with Martin Havlat, 2006. And then you got Kale McCarr, who, like I said earlier, struggled in parts of the regular season on the defensive side, has completely turned it on with Devon Taves on that side of the game. And offensively, he's doing his Kale McCarr thing that he always does in the playoffs. 12 freaking points in 6 games. He had 29-20 the year he won the Conn Smythe Trophy a couple seasons ago. Now he has 12-6. Mikko Rantanen has 11-6. Nathan MacKinnon has 11-6. Val Nichushkin has 9-6. Lekkonen has 8-6. His goal scoring streak ended yesterday. But Kale McCarr at the top of the list, just like he was a couple years ago, 29 points in 20 games in 2022. He's got 12 points in 6 games here. So shout out to the Avalanche's top guys for doing their thing. But the biggest factor this year compared to last year is when you need the depth, they step up. And my goodness, did Miles Wood step up. That was the type of goal that rallies a group. That goal, I know it doesn't have the same effect, and maybe it will in the future, and maybe the Avalanche win the series and we look back at it, or maybe they lose a series and we don't really think much of it. But that goal reminds me a lot of Darren Helm doing what he did in Game 6 against the Blues. In the sense that it's one of your depth guys scoring a big goal in a big moment in a game where the top guys weren't doing it in overtime. He comes out, he does that. I don't want to say the top guys weren't having a game because we just went over the first 3 goals of the Avalanche here. Let's see what the names are on the list. Nichushkin from Makar and MacKinnon, Makar from Nichushkin and Rantanen, MacKinnon from Rantanen and Makar. 3 points for Kale, 2 points for Val, 2 points for Nate, 2 points for Mikko. Those are the core four. Those are the guys we just discussed. But then you get to overtime, and Miles Wood does similarly to what Darren Helm did in 2022. To quote the great Connor McGehee, he takes the helm and he runs with it, beats out Miro Heiskanen wide, comes in on the backhand on Jake Ottinger, and just slots it into the open post before Ottinger can get his skate there. So, big goal for Miles Wood. I did love that the Avalanche, you know, when it got to overtime and even late in regulation, they didn't play Chris Wagner as much, and obviously the Avalanche are kind of struggling with that 12th forward right now, where Chris Wagner, Nikolai Kovalenko, none of them are really doing what Kiviranta did. So we saw Colton and Wood, they had shifts with Trenin. In this case, they had shift with Cogliano. He was the one that sprung Wood out for that partial breakaway after he beat Heiskanen. So I love that they're able to do that. I love that they trust those guys on the fourth line and Cogs and Trennan to bring them up to the third line to play with these guys. Granted, you do want Kiviranta back, hopefully Jonathan Drouin as well. So you can even, in my opinion, sit Duhaime, play Kivi with Cogliano and Trennan, and play Drouin with Wood and Colton. That would be the most ideal lineup. And then obviously Drouin and Parisi can switch if needed at that point. Hell, at this point, you might even just start Parisi on the third line and put Drouin right on the second. But, you know, you can ease him in. We'll see. Obviously, that's a better conversation for when he's back and how good or bad guys like Parisi, Trennan, Duhaime, so on and so forth are playing. And then, obviously, it also depends on Kiviranta's health. So they get this goal from Miles Wood, just a beauty of a goal. His first ever overtime goal, regular season or otherwise. Let me say it again, regular season or playoffs. The otherwise is, of course, the postseason. So just a spectacular game there. I loved seeing the third line come up big. I love seeing Miles Wood be the one that's rewarded with that goal. And I love seeing what those guys were doing all night. I thought Ross Colton was great in the 12 minutes that he played. I thought Miles Wood was awesome. And he was a little over that, I believe, at 13:41 was his ice time. And I still continue to say, you know, he took a bad penalty, but Trennan is a very useful player. Cogliano is a very useful player. You see the depth in this lineup that they didn't have a year ago. Casey Mittelstadt, Parisi, and Lehkonen were a little more quiet yesterday than I would have liked, but, you know, that can always change on a dime, and we'll see the next game. Sometimes you need those players to lift you up. Sometimes they're not gonna. But with the top line playing the way it did, and then Wood and Colton and Cogliano on that third line for that final shift coming up big the way they did, sometimes it's okay for that second line to not have a game. I loved seeing what we saw from Sam Girard on defense. I thought he was great. He played over 26 minutes. I believe he was at 26:54 to be exact, trailing very slightly behind Cale Makar's 28+ and Devon Taves' 27+. He's sticking out big time in these last couple games. Josh Manson played 23 minutes. He had 5 hits, which was right around the top of the list for the Avalanche, behind only Brendan Duhaime, tied with several others at 5. And he was a +1 rating. He also obviously took a penalty that you don't want to see. But thankfully for him, the embellishment was called as well on Rupe Hintz to keep it at 4-on-4. And honestly, I also like what we're seeing from Walker and Jack Johnson. Sean Walker played over 20 minutes yesterday. He was at 20:06, and Jack Johnson at 14:42. Jack continues, in my opinion, over the 3 years with the Avalanche, continues to get better in the limited role that he's given. You know, he's not going to get better where you're going to put him in the top four, but in his limited, I'm a number five, I'm a number six defenseman playing on your bottom pair. I thought Jack Johnson was better this year than last year, and better last year than the year before. And the year before, he won the cup. So shout out to that guy. He's been great. Shout out to Sean Walker. He was great yesterday. It just seems like this team has so many weapons now. It's very refreshing to see. I think my favorite part about the way this roster is built compared to how it was built last year even, and even compared to 2022, is in 2022, when you had guys like Kadri and Landeskog, it was very common to have games where Nathan MacKinnon, you know, yesterday's different because it went to overtime, so everybody's ice time was kind of inflated. But in a regular regulation game, Nathan MacKinnon or Mikko Rantanen will play 22 or 23. That's common now. And then, like, your middle stats and Lehkonen's will, you know, Lehkonen will get a lot of PK time and obviously power play time now, but someone like Mittelstadt, your second line center, he played 17:55, and that was in 3.5 periods yesterday, but usually gets around 14 or 15 minutes in a 60-minute game. That is much different than a couple years ago. A couple years ago, it was common for Landeskog or Kadri to play 20 minutes and MacKinnon to play 18 or 19 on any given night. It didn't always happen, but it could happen. That's just not the case anymore. I don't think you're going to see a game, especially because he doesn't play shorthanded ice time and barely gets on the power play with the top unit. You're not going to see a game where Casey Mittelstadt plays 21.5 minutes and Nathan MacKinnon plays 20. You saw that with Kadri. So what I love about the way this roster is built is last year against the Seattle Kraken, if you guys remember, there was a question that I asked Jared Bednar about the ice time of Mikko and Nate, and he said, these are our top guys. They're the guys we rely on. And he got a little snarky with it and said, if I have to play him 30, I will. because McKinnon had played like 27 minutes in game five or six or something like that. So I think it was game five to be exact. So you look at the way the roster is built now. They obviously switched out Johansson for Mittelstadt. They switched out Tatar for Parisi. They switched out Olofsson or whoever was on the fourth line with Trennan. They added in Duhaime to replace kind of O'Connor, which I don't think is doing a great job at that. I like Kiviranta better. But regardless, they added another depth forward. So they started to switch out all these pieces. Lekkonen and Val both missed large chunks of the regular season. They're both back and healthy. But what you're seeing is McKinnon and Mikko are still playing heavy minutes. Like the Dallas Stars, people love to talk about how they had eight or nine guys with 20 goals and all this depth. And from 1 to 12, they have a very, very, very deep forward core. But their top forward, Jason Robertson, had the most ice time in the regular season, averaging just over 18 minutes a night. I think Lekkonen and Val and Nate and Mikko all average more than that. So for the Avalanche, it used to be spread the wealth a little bit. Now, it used to be spread the wealth a little bit in the days of Kadri and Landeskog and all that. Then it became overplay your top guys because you don't trust the other guys with those kinds of minutes. Now it's, and I say the word overplay very loosely. I don't necessarily mean they're overplaying him. Now it's continue to overplay your top guys, but in those little minutes that you are giving to other guys, now you trust the guys that you're giving those minutes to. Now your second line center, despite him only playing 14 or 15, sometimes 16 minutes in regulation in Casey Mittelstadt, you're getting a hell of a lot more from him in 14 minutes than you were with Johansson. You're getting a hell of a lot more from Zach Parise than you were with Tomas Tatar. You're still overplaying your top guys, giving them more minutes than you were a couple years ago than other top teams like the Rangers and the Dallas Stars do with their top guys. But when they're not on the ice, you trust your depth. And that's my favorite part about the roster build right now. You want to try to match lines? Go ahead, match lines. Jason Robertson is going to play 18 minutes. Roope Hintz is going to play 17 minutes. You want them to go up against Nathan McKinnon with Wyatt Johnston as the third guy? You want that trio to go up against Nathan McKinnon? Go for it. They're going to play 17 or 18 minutes. McKinnon's going to play 24. So that leaves 7 minutes of Nathan McKinnon ice time. Some of that will be sprinkled to the PK is going to go up against McKinnon, but then there's still going to be at even strength an extra 2 or 3 minutes, which is about 3 to 4 to 5 shifts, where McKinnon is going to be matched up against the line you don't want him to face. Because if McKinnon's going to give you 18 or 19 or 20 minutes of even strength ice time, and you're only going to give your top guys 13, 14, or 15 minutes of even strength ice time, there's a discrepancy there. And that, to me, is my favorite part about the way the Avalanche are deploying these guys. You know, we always talk about how in the NBA, one star player makes all the difference because that guy plays 45, 46, 47 minutes. You know, LeBron James leaves Cleveland and goes to Miami. Miami turns into a contender. Leaves Miami, goes to Cleveland. Cleveland turns into a contender. Leaves Cleveland, goes to LA, wins a championship there as well. As Cleveland suffers. Now they're good, but you know, every time he leaves a team, they suffer, for example, because one guy makes a difference. Kawhi Leonard with the Toronto Raptors leaves. One guy can make a difference. In the NHL, the top guys play 20 minutes. So there are still 40 minutes of game time where your top players are not on the ice. But the Avalanche said, you know what? We're paying Nathan McKinnon $12.6 million. This is the first year of his contract. And he's playing 23, 24 minutes a night. And he deserves to play that. He gets paid to play that much. He produces like a player that can handle that. Obviously, 140 frickin' regular season points for Nate McKinnon this year. So the Avalanche are figuring out that fine line of, they're not falling in the Toronto Maple Leafs rut of, if your top guys aren't going, the rest of the team can't because the top guys eat up too much money. But they're finding a way to give their top guys the appropriate amount of minutes for them to step up, for them to lead the charge, just like they did in game one against the Dallas Stars. But when they're not on the ice, you have all the trust in the world in the other guys. You have all the trust in the world that Cogliano could send a pass to Miles Wood and spring him out on a breakaway. Well, not even a breakaway. Him using a burst of speed to then spring out onto a breakaway. And you have all the trust in the world in your defense to move the puck to those guys. So this is going to be a fun series. I'm excited for game two. It's coming back to Ball Arena for 3 and 4 Saturday and Monday. And then we'll see where it goes from there. Game 5, game 6, or game 7. Last thing I want to touch on. We are almost 25 minutes into this bad boy. Alexander Georgiev. I made a joke yesterday that in overtime, Georgiev saw what Shesterkin did and stood on his head in overtime for the Rangers game and took it as an insult because nothing motivates this crazy, crazy man, and I say that nicely, like beating or getting one up on the New York Rangers and Igor Shesterkin, which, by the way, is why I want that to be my Stanley Cup final. Rangers, Avalanche, let's see it. But anyways, Alexander Georgiev, we got to stop this. I'm sorry, we got to stop it. That first period was not on him. Do you want him to make an extra save? Sure. But if the Avalanche had that kind of a first period with a Darcy Kemper, that's probably happening too. With a Philip Grubauer, that's probably happening too. So let's stop piling on Georgiev every single time he lets in a goal. We can't possibly do that. So Georgiev lets in 3 goals. Then he settles down in the second and third. Obviously, you only face 7 shots, but he had to be sharp at times. And then overtime happens. And the Dallas Stars start to press, and they start to push. And I'm sure all you guys were watching it. Your heart's beating. The heart rate is up. You're feeling nervous. You're feeling anxious. You're feeling stressed as the Stars move the puck with that shitty camera angle at American Airlines, where you can see the fans standing up in the arena waiting to cheer for that game-winning goal, waiting to blow the roof off the place to take game one from the Avalanche. And then you see Pavelski send a cross-crease pass to Tyler Seguin. After already making a good save or two, Pavelski sends this cross-crease pass. Ooh, try saying that 3 times. To Seguin. And Seguin shoots it at what looked like an open net, only to see Georgiev sprawl with the pad or with the toe and make the beautiful athletic save. And then obviously 5 minutes later, 6 minutes later, Mouzwood goes the other way, scores a goal, the rest is history. Georgiev was exactly what this team needed, exactly why the Avalanche only spent $3.4 million on their starter, exactly why they got Darcy Kemper at a lower cost from the Arizona Coyotes, and then when it was time to pay him $5-plus million, they didn't do it, exactly why they didn't give Philip Grubauer $5.9 million, because they know when the team in front of you plays the way the Avalanche did, you only had 26 shots, no problem. In more than 71 minutes, the Dallas Stars only had 22. They know that what they need from their goalie is for him to make the saves when they break down, come up with a big save or two like he did in overtime, and we will take care of the rest. You're not asking Georgiev to go out there and make 55 saves like the Rangers had Shesterkin do against the high-flying Carolina team in a game that went to second overtime and in a game where the Hurricanes outshot the New York Rangers 57-39. You're not asking Georgiev to do that. And when he does, by the way, he has a game or two where he can win those games too. And that's the good part. You know, I'm not taking complete credit away from Georgiev and saying that he can never be a good goalie or an amazing goalie. But that's not what your expectation is. And that's why the Avalanche are fine paying a guy like this 3.4. And why they can see themselves reasonably winning a Stanley Cup with somebody like this. Tough first period for the entire team. Automatic tough first period for Georgiev. The team finds its footing. Georgiev finds his footing. The team loses its footing in overtime. You need a clutch save or two. You got your clutch save or two. And then the team puts it on their back. Mouzwood goes deep and scores the goal. So shout out to Georgiev for that. Also, one last shout-out to Josh Manson, who made an incredible save. I saw a lot of people tweeting the save he made on Jordan Kyrou against the St. Louis Blues in Game 6 a couple years ago. My goodness, the Josh Manson experience, you gotta love it. So that's it for today. The Avalanche and the Dallas Stars will take on each other at American Airlines Center. Game 2 on Thursday. I love the every other day cadence, by the way. It's really fun. It kind of makes you feel like right now you're looking at the series and you're saying, oh my God, we are so far away. It is going to be a long series. And then you think about it, in 9 days from now, you're going to be playing game 6 if it gets that far. In 11 days from now is game 7. in 2 weeks from today, you might already be prepping for game one of the Western Conference Final later that night. Or you might be at home wondering what could have been. Like series are long, playoffs are long, but God, does it fly by at the same time. So we'll get another show going on Friday, hopefully, after game two on Thursday against the Dallas Stars. We'll see where this goes. Of course, myself and the rest of the Mile High crew, we're doing pregame podcast from number 38 in Rhino. You guys should come out to that. It's a lot of fun. Great food, great venue, great atmosphere. A lot of Avalanche fans there losing their mind throughout the game. So that'll be for game two. At home, I don't believe the Avalanche still do that, but obviously I'll be at Ball Arena. And then game five, I will be traveling to Dallas. So we're excited to see how this goes. Arif Dean, Mile High Sports, if you made it this far in the podcast, bless the pretty little heart of yours. Let's make hockey for everyone. Talk to you guys on Friday. We out.